This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and this show is called The People Behind the PhDs. This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and welcome to part two of the interview with Peter Leiderman Long, who researches women in politics, Twitter activism, political communication, and diversity and inclusion in public relations at the S.I. Newhouse School of Communication at Syracuse University in Syracuse, New York. There's an overlap of about 10 seconds, so we can pick up right where we left off in The People Behind the PhDs.
All of us to achieve. And so all of her kids are at least graduates of a college. We all have our bachelor's degree at the very least.
So what makes you good at this? I mean, did you grow up playing sports? Were you into different other hobbies? Because yes, your mom pushed you, but what makes you good at this? I mean, you must have been a pretty good high school student to be in this top.
No, healthy fear of your mother.
Really? Okay.
I have a healthy fear of my mother. Carrying home anything less than a B was like glutton for punishment.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, you had to put your work in. And I struggled significantly. I feel like I struggled significantly more than my siblings. Being the first child, but also being a child with dyslexia. And so my dad understood what I was going through. But he comes from a family of teachers. So my dad's mom worked with the Ministry of Education, and his brother teaches math, and like everyone had some touch of teaching on his side of the family. And so my father was that more of the okay, we're going to work towards this goal. And my mother was the this is the goal kind of person.
Okay.
I mean, I did play sports and I was competitive. I played tennis and I swam and I played soccer. I played tennis. Tennis was my significantly competitive sport. That was the sport I was the most competitive in. But that came later on. That was never, it was more in my like last 5 years of high school as opposed to my early years. Yeah, so it's more, if there's anything I attribute my success to, it's a healthy fear of my mother.
Okay. So your mom definitely, you pushed you. Were there any subjects that you were drawn to during your high school time?
A lot, unfortunately. I went into college not knowing what I was doing. I applied to do geology because I was dead set on being a volcanist.
Okay.
I wanted to study volcanoes.
Okay.
I loved geography. I loved geology. And like the Montpierre movie had came out and Volcano. That's the time I grew up in. So I was like dead set. This is what I wanted to do. But I applied for that. I got in to major in math and computer science. And I flunked out my first year of college.
Oh, wow. This is at the University of West Indies? Is that where?
Yes.
Is this in Kingston?
In Kingston, okay. Jamaica.
So after one complete year you failed out, or after one semester?
1 year.
Oh, wow.
1 year. After the end of my, it was the end of my second semester, and I didn't see it coming because I had good grades. Like, I had the second highest averages in my math and computer science classes, and I failed my computer science classes and the retakes I was taking.
Wow!
I just tanked.
What happened? I mean, this is already a surprising story for someone who's about to finish their PhD to fail out of their first year in college.
Yeah.
What happened?
I don't know. I didn't.
Were you having too much fun during college, or are you just not concentrating, or was it the workload? What was going on? That's just, it seems like a fascinating story for someone who's now would be considered by almost anyone in the world a really high achieving academic.
I wanna say it was the computer games, but it wasn't really. It's not. It was essentially not being able to deal with the anxiety of and the stress of the exams. Like I literally had anxiety going into most of my exams, and my brain, as a dyslexic, has a problem processing simple information. So, for example, I'm great. It would be remiss of me to say if I did it all over again, I would be a mathematician today, for example. But I could go into that exam and do all the hard questions and fail all the easy questions.
Wow, that sounds counterintuitive to most people. Why is that? Is it explained by your dyslexia?
I just overcomplicate the situation. I overcomplicate what's being presented to me, and when my brain's stressed out, it keeps going and it overthinks what it's presented with, literally.
Okay, the simple things are become hard because your brain is naturally trying to think through a harder problem that might be in front of you. But then with harder problems, when you're presented with harder, more difficult problems, your brain functions very well. Seems like your brain is a select for harder problems.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And then I had a problem turning it off. I just, I would study, and I felt like I didn't know the information, so I kept on studying. And my dad would be like, you need to rest, you need to go to sleep. And I would be lying down with my eyes closed, and my brain is still processing information. Wow. It's still thinking about the problem. I can see it vividly with my eyes closed. It happens to me even today, when I have pressure. Is one of the reasons why I'm not finished with my dissertation. It's because occasionally I get overloaded because I'm pressed, or I've stressed myself out because I feel like I don't know anything.
This is already incredible, because there's probably people who are listening to this right now, and maybe they have dyslexia as a 13-year-old or as an 18-year-old or something like that. So what happened? Because obviously you're able to finish your undergraduate degree, your bachelor's degree, in good stead. So what did you teach yourself, or what did you learn about your own dyslexia and about learning that allowed you to go back after failing that first year to succeed?
Well, I literally decided that I needed to take hold of my own agency as a learner. And that's kind of how I describe it. I think students in general, anyone who's learning, need to understand how they learn and there's agency in that and take ownership of that.
What does that mean to you, though? I mean, that's a nice expression, but it captures sort of a concept. But what sort of very specific things does that mean to you? What kind of things
so
did
for
you
me,
do?
In that instance, what I did was, after much crying.
Okay, so step one is crying. And then step two.
Step one is allowing yourself to break down.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Because it only frustrates you to do anything else if you're not, tearing down the wall sometimes.
Okay, got it.
So I, after much crying and some ice cream, I gathered all the documentation I had. My parents had done in terms of my assessment.
This People Behind the PhDs episode is sponsored by Harp Concepts. Are you an up-and-coming artist with a bright idea? Are you a startup company who needs to prove your concept? Or are you a person who likes to personalize special gifts? Harp Concepts makes high-quality 3D models for a fraction of the price of big-name companies. Learn more at harpconcepts.com. That's harpconcepts.com.
I knew going into the exam I was having problems, because I had problems at the end of the first semester with my test taking. abilities. So I was already retaking courses. I needed to retake courses that semester, so I was already taking more courses than I should have been in the spring semester. So I knew going in that I was having trouble. And I tried to mitigate some of that as best as possible. You know, I explained to one of my professors, it's not that I want the book to be open. I just feel comfortable if the book is beside me while I'm taking the test.
Oh, wow.
It seems to mitigate some of the stress of me not knowing and enable me to, like, focus and think, I know this. I don't need to open the book. But if I need to, it's right there. I knew I was having problems going in, and so I wanted to address that. So I got all the paperwork that my parents had done from assessments that I had done. My parents had me do growing up, and then I got a second assessment done at age 17, because I got in college real early. I was really early. I was about 17 when I got into college. Technically, I got in when I was 15, but that's another story. So at age 17, I got a second learning assessment done. I went to see a education psychologist. She did an assessment, and I paid for it out of pocket, and she gave me the review, and I used that as a basis to make a case for the kind of individual I am and the kind of work I want to get done. And I appealed the dean of the school, you know, round up a couple of recommendations from professors who knew that I was capable and knew that it is just this problem. And so I made an appeal for reconsideration to allow me to start over instead of waiting 2 years to reapply. And that's how I got back into school. After that, I ended up sitting down with the dean of humanities, dean in my school, and he took me on as an advisor, and we came up with a plan, figuring out what programs would work best for me. And because I have a better understanding of how I learn and what my strengths were in terms of performance and how I could process information better.
So it sounds there's really fascinating your journey already. So obviously you care about education, and it's pushed in your family and in the country and obviously the school you went to. So that's hard enough for just most people. But you had a secondary journey of working with accepting your dyslexia and what that meant to you, and then your anxiety, those two things, that was those are secondary journeys, I should say, plural. But then there was this sort of activism an attorney making her case to get reinstated. So it seems like every time you've learned something, you have these parallel journeys you're going through during your education. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I would say that's accurate.
Wow.
You know, it's definitely important to be your own activist, right? Because if you don't take ownership of that, if you don't advocate for yourself, you're going to be at the whim of everything. When I made the appeal, the response to me was, we'll allow you to just start fresh, and you can use the disability services on campus, but be warned that there is nothing really we can do to accommodate you. The response back in general from the institution, not anybody specific, but from the institution as a whole, was, we can let you slide through and graduate, knowing that this is the problem you have. Our accommodations are, you'll graduate at best.
So how is it that you discovered that you learned best? Like you said before, like having a book next to you during an exam just gave you confidence that you could figure things out. But what other things did you learn?
First of all, I wasn't satisfied with the idea of sliding through college. It just wasn't happening. So I had to, I re-engage a lot of things I learned in that my mother actually helped me to gain through all the programs she put me through. When I was in high school, I went into REDAC, and I literally pulled up all of my old old documentations from those classes and started to apply them to my classroom. You know, taking my notes, I changed the way I was taking notes altogether. I also was taking different classes, so I didn't go back into computer science and math. I went into communications and philosophy.
So how did you start taking notes that was different from before?
Well, so it's similar to how I take notes right now. If I were in a class, I take, and there are slides being projected, I don't wait on the slides. I literally jot down all that information. But I also make tangential notes so that I know what comments or what important things have been said communicated to me in the lecture links to the points that are being highlighted. So,
does that help with memory retention? Is that why you do
it? It does help with memory retention. I think writing down things, especially for me, helps with memory retention. I write down everything.
Okay.
I have way too much paper in my office. I kill a lot of trees. I write down everything. And I print out a lot of things too. I'm trying to make the transition to digital. It's really hard because I get migraines and staring at a screen too long does not help. I've been trying to transition to digital as best as possible, but I print everything out. And I don't just highlight. I know some people like they use multiple color highlights. I use a pencil, and I make, if I had a thought about something, if I rewrite what I understand, and I follow the leads of the discussion.
Thanks for listening to part two of the interview with Peter Leiderman Long, who researches women in politics at the S.I. Newhouse School of Communication at Syracuse University in Syracuse, New York. To continue listening, visit drz.net. That's drz.net. You can also follow me on Facebook at DRZ Podcasts and iTunes. As always, happy deciding. People Behind the PhDs is conceived, written, produced, and edited by Dr. Z, that's me, Zachary Brooks, PhD, in Dr. Z Productions and Podcasts. Learn more at drz.net/about. That's dr-z.net/about.